I'm Jay from Gallifrey Public Radio, a Doctor Who podcast and part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other incredible geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome back to another Play Comics Creator episode where I just grab somebody who makes cool stuff and we talk about it because it's cool and I'm trying to take all of your money and give it to people who are not me. Today, I have Patrick Hickey Jr., who has written at least two books right now. We're here to talk about the newer one, The Minds Behind Adventure Games. Patrick, how are you today?
Doing really good, man. Thank you for having me on so we can talk about the creative process.
Dude, the creative process is like half the reason I wanted to have you on for this, because I have so many ideas floating around in my head and I'm trying to just siphon off all of your energy so that I can get them out.
Okay.
So I think we need to start in probably the most obvious question here. What was your inspiration behind writing the minds behind Adventure Games?
So I had just finished The Minds Behind the Games. And I didn't know if I wanted to do a sequel or not. I had a lot of fun writing the first book. But I wanted to see how, like, you know, obviously the ecosystem, you know, reacted to it and things of that nature. And it turned out really good. People really dug it. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to do a sequel. And then what ended up happening was a lot of the people that I wanted to respond the first time, they didn't, and then they started to respond like after the first book had come out. So it was just perfect timing that like people from like Loaded, Revolution X, and a whole bunch of cool, you know, games that we all played when we were kids. Now they were like, oh, I'm so sorry, this went into like my filtered, you know, mail or da 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 da, or for various reasons, you know, where I just pestered them again. So what ended up happening was in the span of probably about 3 months, I got like 25 developers to get back. So I told my publisher that I wanted to do a sequel and I wanted it to have like 45 games. They were like, yeah, no. I'm like, what? They said, from the list of games that you've sent us so far, like you're talking, this is like at least 3 books. Like, what are you talking about? You got like 8 shooters here. And you've got like 10 adventure games and you've got like 5 sports games. Why don't you do, you know, spin-offs? And I'm just like, no. And they're like, well, that's what we want. And I remember talking to my wife about it. My wife's like, that's actually like a really good idea and you could have a lot of fun. And da, 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 da. So I was just like, okay. So I told them, let's do adventure games first, then sports, then shooter. And then I just signed the contract last month for the Minds Behind the Genesis games. And I've already got 36 games for the Genesis book, which is it's going to be the biggest book that I've done so far. And the shooter book is the biggest book that I've done so far. And sports is bigger than adventure. So if that tells you anything, like the bar continually gets raised with each book. So the first book was a lot of fun. It's got 36 games in it. I had a blast writing it. But the second book, even though it only has 30, the reporting is a lot better. The chapters are longer. There's a lot more fun tidbits in there. So the adventure book is definitely a step up from the first one. So yeah, that's kind of like where it all started. It's just, I didn't want to be a one-hit wonder. There's a lot of people out there that have just wrote one book, but to have a book series, I think that's really freaking cool. So yeah, that was where my mind was at.
So how did you go about hunting down interview targets? It sounds like this one was kind of people you had tried to talk to before.
Well, it was that, and then, so this is what happened. So the first time I did the first book, I knew a lot of people because I had worked at NBC for quite some time, and you know, I've been running my own entertainment website for quite some time, so I had connections in gaming and in indie gaming and retro gaming and stuff like that. So I used those connections to help write games and found instruction manuals and found names of developers and programmers and producers and artists and all these people, and I just started contacting them, phone calls, found out where they worked, things like that. And it was hard. It was really hard. So, but for the adventure book, it just like I went back to some of the same people that were great to me, and I was just like, you know what, they have more stories to tell. And then I just went out and started finding more people. Also, another cool thing was, after the first book came out, I started a Facebook page, Minds Behind Names, and I proposed questions on there all the time. So like when I was working on the adventure book, I'm like, give me an adventure game that you guys would like to know more about. And I remember this guy, Douglas Coleman, was like, yeah, Croc, Legend of the Gobos. Oh, wow, I remember Croc. So then I just went on my hunting spree and I found the guy. And a couple of weeks later, we're on a Skype session. We talked for like 2 hours and boom, that's a chapter. By Shane Stein, that was like, oh, there was this text-based adventure game on the Apple called Zill. It's like, what? I never even heard of that. And then when somebody says the name of a game that I've never heard, that just like, that turns me on. That's just like Selma Hayek sitting in my lap naked. So I was just like, okay, let me search up on this game. And I found out it was like super influential. So I ended up finding the developers for that game, and that's featured. So that's like the creative process for the first two books. The third and the fourth and the fifth, I mean, now I have developers telling me, oh, speak to this guy or speak to that guy, or you know what, I'm gonna help you get that guy. So it's so different from when I first started. When I first started, I was completely by myself, and now I have like just a nice legion of people that are so interested in what I'm doing that want to help me. So yeah.
So how did you define what would be an adventure game for this one? Because just looking through the list, there are definitely some ones in there that when I see the titles, I don't think adventure game.
Well, first off, shut up. That's the first thing. How about that? No. So this is the thing. To me, adventure is any game that tells a story. So I wasn't necessarily interested as much in gameplay as much as like games that told a story. So like Parappa the Rapper is in there. Parappa the Rapper is in there for a couple of reasons. One, because I love the game and I think it's great, and I think it has a great story that needs to be told. Then secondly, it's like to do the Minds Behind the rhythm games, I mean, that would never happen because there's not enough rhythm games out there, you know. I wouldn't interview the team behind every single Guitar Hero. Then why don't I just do a Guitar Hero book, you know? But the thing is, there's no rhythm game that has a story like Parappa. Like the gameplay is secondary to Parappa's urge to get Sunny Funny and to, you know, to bring her, you know, into his heart, into his life. So to me, it's like, yes, it's a rhythm game, but it's also an adventure game. You know, some other games that might fall into the adventure category that like people might think of, like Die Hard Trilogy. Die Hard Trilogy is just basically like three tech demos. It's a light gun game, it's a racing game, and it's a third person shooter. But when you put those all together, it's a really wacky adventure. Like Die Hard Trilogy couldn't necessarily go in a shooter book because of the racing elements, and it definitely couldn't go in a sports book. So I was just like, you know what, put all those things together and that's a crazy ass adventure. So yeah, it's going in the adventure book. So that's kind of like my mentality. If there's a great story that like drives the entire experience, then it's going in the adventure book.
So does that kind of leave the possibility of a future the Minds Behind more adventure games for some more catch-all things that couldn't get their own book?
Absolutely. I mean, I think right now I'm finishing up Minds Behind the shooter games. I probably have three more chapters that I have to write, and that manuscript is due like the first week of April, so that'll probably be out like around Christmas time. And then I'm doing the Genesis book, probably going to slow down a tiny bit when it comes to like writing the books. But I mean, I'm going to have three more books coming out in the next year and a half. So then that gives me time to kind of plot like my next like edition of the series. depending on how the Genesis version goes, then I mean, it may not even have to be genre specific. It could be console specific. You know, that's one of the reasons why I'm so happy that like McFarlane gave me this idea to do spin-offs, because the thing is, it doesn't have to be genre specific. It doesn't even have to be console specific. Like I could do the minds behind the 80s games. You know, I could do the minds behind the, you know, the 80s arcade games, you know, like I could do, there's so many different variants of what I could do. And that just makes it a heck of a lot of fun and keeps people guessing. I never want people to be like, oh yeah, well he has to do this one next. So like right around Christmas time is when I announced that I was going to do a Genesis book, and people were like, holy crap, that's great. Like they didn't expect me to go console specific. So maybe the next book will be an 80s book, or maybe it might be another console, or maybe it might be another genre. Like that's part of the fun of the entire experience.
So what's your game picking process like for what gets into the books?
It's a whole bunch of things. It's does the game inspire thought when the name is mentioned? So it's like if I say Night Trap, most people go, oh, that game sucks. And then I say, first off, it doesn't. And then two, there's a story behind it. So shut your mouth, get comfortable, and listen to the story. That's one part. The other one is, did it sell a lot of copies? So like if the game is super popular, you know, if the game sold like 5 million copies and there's not a lot of information on it, then I think that deserves a story. Then another one is a game that didn't sell like any copies that probably should have, like games that have like mishaps during development, or games that have super thin Wikipedia pages, games that have really crappy Google returns. Those are games that I'm really interested. Also, I've spent a good 10 years interviewing indie developers. So it's like every book I try and make sure that I get like 3 or 4 indie games that people will go, wait, why is this game like right before this game? Like, what the hell is this? You know? And then they go, oh, whoa, this game sounds actually like really cool. And this indie developer gave up a lot of their personal life and professional life to make sure that this game happened. I should, you know what? Let me spend $10. It's like interviews cult, classic, and indie developers all mushed into one. I want people to kind of get an idea of what it takes, what kind of person makes a video game, and the things that they have to go through. And indie games are so important now that I'd be crazy not to mention it. So it's a whole bunch of factors. The first book was more like, I may never be able to do this ever again, so I'm gonna write about a whole bunch of books that affected me. A whole bunch of games that affected me. And then I tried to get in a couple of like really like stellar ones that people would get drawn into and things like that. The adventure book was a little bit similar, but then I wanted to get a couple more big names, and that's, you know, the original Grand Theft Auto, to get that in the adventure book. I mean, that's probably one of the best chapters that I've ever written. But the sports was definitely combining all of those things that I told you. That's why like Super Blood Hockey is in the sports book, because it's just this awesome indie hockey game that no one knows about, and they absolutely should.
So one of the questions that Ignorance Was Bliss Kate asked on Twitter is, what is your earliest gaming memory?
Probably playing RBI Baseball on the NES. Of course, always like, you know, Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt and Legend of Zelda. But like, I remember playing RBI Baseball at like 3-4 years old, just sitting in front of the TV at like 7 o'clock in the morning, or like sitting back playing ice hockey like before bed as a little kid, you know, in kindergarten. So sports games have always kind of been like my go-to and my jam. And RBI Baseball was the first baseball game on the NES to have real players. So for me to be able to play with like the 86 Mets and to play with the American League All-Stars and play with like George Brett and Don Mattingly, I mean, that was just insane to me. I was such a huge baseball fan as a kid. Not so much now, because like steroid scandal just like ruined it. And there's so many asterisks, and now you got teams cheating like hardcore. It's just like, it's not the same anymore. I'd rather just watch hockey, you know? So hard to like, you can't cheat in hockey. You got to just have the biggest heart, like, in order to play hockey. You got to be able to, like, be willing to kill you, you know? But playing baseball games on the NES back in the day, and there were so many. Now, if PS4, it's like RBI Baseball, which is not, it's not the same team, and the show. That's it. You know, hockey too. So many hockey games back in the day. Now it's just NHL. So different from the way that it used to be. So yeah, my earliest gaming memory is definitely those early NES sports titles like RBI Baseball and Ice Hockey.
And also from Kate, what video game do you think has the best soundtrack?
There's a game that's coming out probably in the spring of 2021. Jeffrey Paquette wrote the score, and it's absolutely awesome. And his brother, Pete Paquette, you guys may know him. He was a senior animator on BioShock Infinite, and he's also worked on Overwatch, League of Legends, Madden. So the three of us are designing a top-down third-person shooter. It's kind of like if Link had a gun in the original Legend of Zelda, and instead of that sword that he had Strider's sword. That's kind of like how the game plays. So we've been developing this game for probably about a year now, and I love the soundtrack to this game. So away from that, games that you guys may know, Final Fantasy VII soundtrack is so iconic to me. Splatterhouse 2 has an amazing soundtrack. Sweet Home has an amazing soundtrack. So yeah, I'm kind of all over the place when it comes to soundtrack.
Yeah, I definitely haven't been listening to the Final Fantasy VII one at work for the past 3 or 4 days. No, not at all.
No.
So what is your writing process? For me, I'm kind of wondering, like, do you do it a chapter at a time, or do you just kind of wiggle your way between things?
Well, yeah, see, like, that's the best thing. So if you've read the book, you notice that, like, each chapter can kind of stand alone by itself. You know, so it's just like the thing that's in common is that it's the behind the scenes story of the game. So that's the best part. Like if you're reading the book and you don't want to read a chapter, you could just skip ahead to the next one. So what I do is I'm speaking to anywhere from like 50 to 75 developers at any one given time. And as they're sending me stuff, then I'm writing the chapter. So it's a great writing experience because it's like I never have to feel like anything has to build or connect to one another. I just think of it as like 35 to 40 different stories that I managed to tell like in one book. So it's a lot easier to write like a work of fiction where you're worrying about everything having this type of cohesion and stuff like that. But at the same time, too, it is a book. So I tried to create something that I knew that I could manage, that I could maintain. And the process has just gotten easier and more effective as I've gone through. So now, like, on book 5, I'm just, like, I'm completely flying. So when I speak to a developer, I make sure that they give me the release and that I know that they're, like, good to go. So, like, before they even start answering the questions, I've gotten, like, the introduction in, and then I've gotten, like, the whole bones around, like, where I want their quotes to go. So it's just like I'm just building the chapter. So this way, when they send me their answers, I can go through it and plug it in. Or like we do the interview and then I transcribe everything and then I just start putting answers in. It's you know, I've managed to kind of like streamline the entire process and make it as easy and intuitive as possible.
Big changes in your process from the first book.
So before I didn't ask for like releases until I finished. My publisher requires me to like have every story sign a release. So like in journalism, like when I worked for NBC and like the site that I own now and run for over a decade, reviewfix.com, if I interview you, then like we're good to go. Then I just post the interview. Like I don't need you to sign a release or anything. You know, when I wrote for the Daily News and stuff like that, I never had to get a release from anybody. When I sold photos to the New York Times, they never asked me to get a release from the person that I was taking pictures of. So it was just a little bit different. And I had a couple of people kind of screw around with the releases. Like I wrote the chapter and then I'm just like waiting for them to sign the release. And then they're just like, oh, well, I don't do releases and I don't understand why you need me to sign. Da, 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 da. And it would just, oh my God, this is a weird chapter. You're like, you're killing me, Smalls. Like, you're killing me. And went through a couple of processes like that with the first book. And everyone eventually signed. Everyone was cool. They got it at the end that if they didn't sign the release, I couldn't put them in the book. And just the adventure book, the sports book and stuff, I've just been kind of like, all right, listen, I'm going to let you like go over your quotes again. I want you to see the chapter before it goes to print because I want us to make sure that it's perfect, that it's right. And but I need you to sign the release. So now everyone's a lot cooler. Like the Genesis book has just been, like I told you, I have 36 chapters like confirmed. I've got like half the book written already, and everyone whose chapter I've written already has already signed the release, which is so crazy compared to the way that it's been before. Like, it just keeps getting like more streamlined, easier to manage, and people are just jumping on board a lot easier. Like, people answer my pitches a lot faster than they did 2.5 years ago when I first started this. So just a much, much different.
So jumping ahead a little bit, what has the publishing process been like?
The publishing process is basically like, I write the book, I send it in with all of the photos that I want to use, the captions, everything. They put the book together. Then that takes about like 6 months. And I read it over a couple of times too to make sure everything's perfect. And we tighten it up and everything. And then it goes to print. They're like, McFarlane's great that way. It's like everything gets done. They send the book out. But away from a couple of snafus, like they're really great at like getting everything out to everybody. And it's just, I write the book, I give it to them. They appreciate the fact that they have gotten this book into colleges that, like, as a person from Brooklyn, New York, that I would never have like any right being near. So like the fact that like my book is in the libraries of like UCLA and Stanford and Michigan and Minnesota and, you know, Marshall and all these great colleges, like it's insane to me. So the reason why I went with McFarlane is because they're an educational nonfiction publisher. And as a college professor, if I went the commercial route, my colleagues would kind of be like, oh, you know, he thinks he's Stephen King, blah, blah, blah. And that's not me. Like, I wanted to write a book that people would read. Yes, I wanted to write a commercial book, which I think my book is, but I also wanted to write a book that would be able to get into university libraries and college students and high school students would be able to read it. Because I think it's something that if you're young and you want to be a game designer, this is something that you should read. So it was kind of like the best of both worlds. And, you know, we've been working together now for 2.5 years. I've got like another 3 books with them, and they've done a pretty damn good job. So pretty happy with them overall.
So I'm assuming your students know you're writing these books, right?
Yeah, and that's like one of the cool parts too, because it's been 2.5 years. Students that have graduated have come back with their copies of the books, and they've asked me to sign it, or they're on the Facebook page and they suggest games, and they're a part of the conversation. And that's what I wanted. I wanted this to be like a group effort. I wanted people to be interested in what I was doing, and I wanted like the whole process to just be super fun and like accessible to a ton of people. So that's kind of like what we succeeded in doing.
So is doing that kind of made you the cool professor around there?
Well, I was already the cool professor before, to be honest. Like, I'm a lot younger than most of my colleagues. Like, I'm 30. So that was part of it. But then, you know, and plus, like, I've been running my own site for 10 years. I was an editor at NBC. So like, I was doing cool interviews. Like, I mean, I was the editor on call at NBC when Whitney Houston died. You know, so it's like I got NBC like millions of page views because like I didn't fall to pieces, and I managed like all of my writers, and we got tons of great stuff up. I covered 2.5 seasons of Saturday Night Live. I covered 3 Super Bowls. I covered SummerSlams and WrestleManias. So like I was already the cool professor before that, and then this is just kind of like taking it up another stratosphere. So I'm not the most popular coworker because of that, but you know what? Like, who cares?
I mean, they can go write their own video game book and have the students clamor over them.
Yeah, they won't, though.
So another question from Kate via Twitter, who gave us a few. What do you listen to while you're writing?
It's funny. I usually just have like Spotify going on. And the first book was all over the place. I listened to like a little bit of everything. But for the adventure book, I don't know. It just, I came across like Darius Rucker's first like album, like this country album, and like Wagon Wheel in particular. I just listened to that song on repeat 1,000 goddamn times because it's just like super catchy, and it was just something that I felt like I could write along to. I don't know. And then the sports book was a little bit of everything. The shooter book and the Genesis book, I've been listening to a lot of Fozzy. Chris Jericho's new song is fucking awesome. Pardon my French, but Judas Kiss, or not Judas Kiss, that's another song. Name of that song. The name of the album is Judas, but it's such a good freaking song. It's his entrance song in All Elite Wrestling. And I have that on like all the time. And like Chris Jericho is like such a mentor to me. Like I just love that he's been able to, like, how many people would like dream of being a best-selling author, a professional wrestler, and a musician that sold like millions of records. And he has his own crews. Like, this guy is just like he's got a great podcast. He's got over 100,000 subscribers on his YouTube channel. Like, this guy, like, everything he does is successful. So for me, it's like, yeah, I'm a college professor, but like now I'm doing the voice acting thing. I'm working in the video game industry. I got the books. It's just somebody that I'd love to model myself after. So like, to listen to him sing, it's kind of fuel for the fire, so to speak.
Delvin Cox over on Twitter asks, what do you think of the Telltale game series and the impact it's had on the adventure genre of video games?
So it's kind of like, Telltale to me is like Kurt Cobain. Like the run that Kurt Cobain had in Nirvana, like, was insane and will never be duplicated ever again. And I think what Telltale was able to do with the adventure game genre was absolutely amazing. I tried super hard to get them in the book. I didn't see anybody. I definitely would have loved to have at least one Telltale game in the adventure book, but I tried. It wasn't for lack of trying. I love all of those games. The Batman game is great. The Guardians of the Galaxy one, the Borderlands one, the Game of Thrones one was awesome. But like the Minecraft one, to me, brought me so much closer to that property than I would have gotten any other way. Like, I ended up playing through all of those games with my nephew. My daughter thinks it's a movie, so she's going to be 3 next week. So she'll watch me play them, and she gets into the story. So, but this is the thing, too. Like, if Telltale was still around in the same way, and they were still doing all of these games, like, could it have become a fad? Could people have gotten sick of it? Maybe. But the thing is, they have this great body of work from, like, five or six years of work that will probably never be duplicated ever again. So it's going to just be continue to be hyped forever. People are always going to associate great adventure games with Telltale. They never had an opportunity to kind of fall off the wagon. So I'm not saying that the games would have eventually gotten to be to the point of a fad, but they could have. But the company's destruction ended up like being something that cemented their legacy for a long time.
Cap Understands from Twitter asked specifically about larger scale adventure games. Do you think having multiple endings hurts the narrative and a singular experience for people to talk about, or does it enhance it due to personalization?
I think like games like Fallout 3 and Deus Ex, I think they're amazing because everyone has an opportunity to play the game in a different way. And I think that just makes conversation so much better when you're talking about a game. Somebody's like, oh yeah, I went to this town and then I did this. And the person can go, wait, you did that? That's not what I did. I didn't blow up the town. I let the town, da 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 da. So it's just, I like that a lot more. But at the same time too, like, you know, you're playing Legend of Zelda and you're stuck and you can have a conversation with somebody. So I go where and I do what when this game comes out. So I don't think like either way it affects the genre. I think, though, personally, I like to play games where the developer allows me to play the game the way that I want to. And that's a big problem that a lot of developers have. They design in a way where they limit the choice that the game. And great developers always understand that you can't control the way someone is going to play your game.
So Kate also asks, do you prefer pancakes or waffles? And there is a correct answer here.
I'm a waffle guy. I just appreciate the crunch. I'm weird like that. I love freaking waffles, like, as close to burnt as possible. The nice amount of butter on them, some syrup. Pancakes are all right. I'll never turn down pancakes, but, like, waffles, like, yeah, that's one way to keep me in a
I do have people who call me waffles in real life, so anybody who prefers pancakes, I think it's just weird.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And keeping on the theme of eating things, Coltreg, who a few episodes on this show, over on Twitter, asked, would you eat Vector Man? And if you had a chance, what do you think he would taste like?
It just sounds like a very sexual question. Sounds like Harvey Weinstein would ask that question. I don't know what Vector Man would taste like. You know, it's like he would taste like pixels. Like what like pixels taste like? You know, I mean, aesthetically, they're gorgeous, but they probably have like no teeth. Yeah, I wouldn't eat Vector Man. Yeah, he probably wouldn't have any teeth.
When I read that, I just instantly thought of somebody trying to eat the cartridge, and that didn't go much better.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
And a final question from Kate. What is your favorite color?
Red. I've always been a red guy. I'm wearing a jersey right now, despite the fact that I'm a hardcore New York Islanders fan, just because it's kind of like my tribute to the Ferris Bueller movies. Same jersey that Cameron used to wear in the movie. And then I have a red iPhone 11. So I'm just, red is like my color. Love it.
So we've gotten an overall games in general. We've gotten adventure games published now. Which of your books is going to come out next?
So we've got, so like, as you said, the original Minds Behind the Games that came out in April of 2018. Then we got the Minds Behind the Adventure Games that came out in December of 2019. Then the Minds Behind the Sports Games is going to come out probably like around June. Then the Minds Behind the Shooter Games is probably going to come out either in like December or January. So like December of like 2020 or January 2021. And then the Minds Behind the Sega Genesis Games is next. And I don't have a release date for that because I'm like actually still working on it, but it's confirmed for it. So if I don't finish it, they'll come after me. So those are the five games in the series right now.
And I'm looking forward to all of those. I mean, especially the Sega one for me, because I grew up with a Genesis and mm-hmm. just surrounded by Nintendo Same people. Here.
Absolutely. You know what the thing is too, it's just like one of the reasons why I wanted to do a Sega book is just because the lineup of games is just so completely different from the Super Nintendo. It was like just, it was a completely different world. There were so many more sports games on the Genesis. The RPGs were so different. There was so many more beat-em-ups on the Sega Genesis. Like, it just felt like such a different world. And, you know, I had a Super Nintendo and a Genesis, and I leaned on both of them at different times. And Sega was totally right when they said they did things Nintendo won't. And it was just a really special time in gaming, and that's one of the things that I wanted to focus on. How, like, perfect example, like a game like Aladdin plays so different on the Genesis than it does the Super Nintendo, or a game like Shadowrun is completely different on the Genesis than it is the Super Nintendo. So because there were so many differences in those consoles and what they could do, so it's going to be a really fun book. I've gotten about 18 chapters finished so far and confirmed, and it's just it's a really crazy lineup. I wanted the book to kind of have the feeling that you were walking into an old like video rental store. Like, I remember when I was a kid, I would walk into the video like rental store, and I'd go into like the Genesis section, and I would just be surrounded by all this amazing box art, and I didn't know like what this game was or what that game was, and they all had weird and crazy names and stuff. So The Genesis book is going to be very different from the stuff that I've done before. There's obviously going to be some big name games in there, but some of them are going to rented that game like 10 times, blah, 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 or, you know, oh my God, I remember that game. I never rented that. That game looked like shit. Da, 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 da. So that's, the Genesis book is going to be a lot of fun in that regard.
If people want to get their hands on one of your books, where is the best place for them to do that?
So the book is available like everywhere fine books are sold online. So like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, Indigo, Books A Million, like every single place that you could buy a book online, they have them. However, for me personally, the best way for me to get the most out of the experience and for me to provide the coolest experience for the reader is if they go to patrickhickeyjr.com. So what's going to happen is you can order the first two books and you can pre-order the third book directly from there. And then what will happen is I will get a book for you from my publisher and I will personalize it for you and I will sign it. And then, like, obviously I'm going to have to ship it to you. So I'll have your address and your email address. So what I'll do is I'll shoot you an email address. And it's like, if you're from like Colorado, I'll be like, oh, are you an Avalanche fan? Are you a Rockies fan or whatever? And if you tell me like what you're into, then I'll throw in some like baseball cards or football cards. If you're like, oh, I like Pokemon, I'll throw in a pack of Pokemon cards in there or something like that. So I really want to have a relationship with each of my readers. I spend a lot of time on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram just talking to readers. And it drives like some of my friends crazy because they'll be like, oh my God, who are you talking to? And I'm just like, I'm talking to somebody that bought the book. Like, they're with me on this experience, you know, and they deserve, you know, me to be as forthcoming with information and to be, you know, as nice as possible. So I love that relationship. Like whenever I do signings and speaking engagements, I love when people come over to me and want to engage in real conversation. And I've met people for the first time that have come to see me speak that have like followed me on Facebook and stuff. So that's what I want. I don't want anyone to ever feel like they came to like a book signing or they bought my book and it was just like this lather, rinse, repeat experience. Like, I don't want to be one of those authors. I don't want to be one of those people. So if you order the book directly through me, you're going to get something super personalized. So like, I'll give you an example. I had an animator by the last book, Minds Behind the Adventure Games. He bought the first book as well. And he's a super big animator. I'm not going to give his name away or anything, but he just worked on Spies in Disguise with Tom Holland and Will Smith. He's like a legend. He did Rio, Horton, Here's a Who, Peanuts. Like, he's awesome. And he ordered the book. And one of our mutual friends, I reached out to him. I'm like, what was he into? He's like, oh, he's a huge, like, Denver Broncos fan. I'm like, okay. So there's an antique store near my house and they sell like, you know, boxes of like old cards and you can kind of like just go through and fill up like a bag with like a Ziploc bag with like as many cards as you can for like $5. So that's what I usually do. And I picked out like 5 or 6 Broncos cards that were like 30, 35 years old, like 1985, 1990, like Fleer, you know, football cards. And I put them in his book and he just messages me like a picture of the book with one of the cards. He was like, dude, this is like my favorite football player of all time. How did you know? And I'm like, I didn't. I'm like, I just put as many cool cards as I could. And I'm like, he was a pretty good player. So, and he goes, no, you don't understand. Like, I retired in like 1995 and they met in 2000. And in 2001, I used to put him in the game because the Broncos sucked like on defense. And I was just like, oh my God, that's so crazy. So he was like, dude, I want to get a frame for this card just because, like, he goes, dude, it just like made my day. He's like, I can't wait to read your book. He goes, but I'm like so thrilled that you sent me this card. I'm like, nah, man, enjoy it. So that's kind of like the experience I want to have with all of my readers. So if you order through me, then that's kind of like what I'm going to try and do for you.
I mean, that's just top notch service right there.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what I would want. You know, if I ordered a $40 book from somebody, I would want like something to make it even more worthwhile. I mean, that's the thing. People have said to me, like, why are your books, you know, $40? And you know what? It is pricey. I don't set the price. My publisher does. But I mean, so much time and effort goes into making these books. Like, between just contacting, just interviewing them takes so much time. Writing takes time. Editing takes time. Laying out all of the photos. Like, I'm a one-man band. I'm doing all of this stuff by myself. Marketing the books, doing all these podcasts. Like, I have t-shirts. Like, I sell t-shirts when I'm at speaking engagements. Like, I have to play these games a lot, too, in order to capture the essence of them. So it's just, like, it's hard to convey that on the back of a sticker price. So it's like, if you get the book and then there's something else in there that kind of connects you to the process, then I think, like, hey, you know what? It was $40, but like, wow, like this is something that I want to eat for the rest of my life. You know, that's kind of like what I'm trying to do.
And if people want to find you for anything else around the internet, where can they do that?
So I'm on Instagram. I'm like an Instagram whore. I'm at Patrick Hickey Jr. at Instagram. I'm at ReviewFixPat at Twitter. If you just Google my name, I'm on Facebook. I'm Googleable. So, like, if you Google my name, like, I come up, I'm the first thing that comes up, and all of my platforms are there and stuff. I'm on LinkedIn. And like I said, I love to speak to people, so don't ever be shy to, like, contact me. I'm not one of those people. One of the things that pisses me off so bad about Instagram is, like, you have people that have 35, 40,000 followers, and you follow them because you think they're cool, and then when you try and interact with them, they never even answer you. So I never, ever want to be like that. So, like, I have, like, 2,000 followers on Instagram. You know, it's a lot for some people, but for some other people, it's nothing. But I make sure that every single person that messages me gets a response from me. And I can promise you that when I have 50,000 people, it's not going to change either. It might not be as long, and I may not connect with every single person the same way, but I'll at least make sure that they know that I got their message and that I care, you know, about them. So if you reach out to me, like, I'm totally down to talk. I mean, I love video game history. I feel like video game history deserves support more than what it's gotten so far. So, like, just jump on board and be a part of the adventure.
And as always, we will have links to all that down in the show notes, because clicking things is so much easier than trying to spell it out. And if you want to follow me, then just go to playcomics.com. There's all the stuff over there. Spend your time looking at Patrick's stuff, because it's so much cooler.